the podcast that finishes your workday in a very Red Raider way. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
I'm Mike Hebert, owner of Cantex Roofing and Construction. Every day is game day, and we'll get it right when it comes to your roofing, construction, windows, and mirrors. Call Cantex Roofing and Construction today. Together, we are one serving you.
What is it about this time slot that our producers just eat? Like, Brennan's in there chowing down. You got some bean dip in there, or is it just Doritos?
It's just Doritos, just, but I think it's just the hour in you usually sits in this seat.
Sure. No, it's that chair at this time. Time for some headlines. We call it the juice here on Double T 97.3. Texas Rangers will be back in action tonight. They are opening up a series in Houston against the defending world champion Houston Astros. First pitch at 7:10. Our Rangers coverage will begin for you at 6:30 on Double T 97.3. Our Astros coverage will begin for you at 6:40 on 100.7 The Score. The Rangers are three games up on the Astros in the AL West division standings. And really, those are the only two teams at the moment kind of fighting it out. The Angels are eight games back. The Mariners are 8.5 games back. The A's right there, 32 games back. A former Northwestern volleyball player filed a lawsuit today in Illinois claiming that the school and its athletic department were negligent in response to a hazing incident that occurred in the spring of 2021. The player filed her lawsuit anonymously so that she was injured while running sprints as part of a punishment sanctioned by Coach Shane Davis, and that Davis, quote, enabled a culture of racism, bullying, harassment, hazing, and retaliation within the Northwestern volleyball program. Of course, comes at a
good grief
terrible time for Northwestern. On top of this, they have football lawsuits now facing them as a result of the hazing scandal within the football program. You had an assistant coach that was named as part of this thing. So just a complete and total mess. You too can join the program. We'd love to hear from you on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at DoubleT973.com. This might, it's interesting, Gus, because on the one hand, the allegations that have been made by anonymous and not anonymous former players indicate this is a pretty widespread, pervasive, and lengthy scandal, right? This atmosphere has been within that program for a decade plus. And there's just more and more coming out every day. And it's interesting because in terms of the number of people affected directly and the length of time that this covers, this is going to be one of the biggest, scandals in recent college football memory, right? There have been other scandals, Baylor, Penn State, where the victims have been not affiliated with the program or the athletic department, right? And certainly those offenses bring out a lot more emotion, reaction, and, for good reason, I get it. But I think that this is maybe being underplayed. I don't know if it's just kind of a matter of, boys will be boys. Or locker room, hijinks.
Fat guys in the locker room, yeah, stuff.
And it's, I'm not like...
and that's my quote of the article.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm not saying that anybody's like wrong or that, you should be ashamed of yourself for not being covered in outrage. It's just kind of an interesting dynamic because this is gigantic. It's gigantic.
Yeah, and the fact that it's jumping across other sports. And we don't know yet enough about the allegations of the volleyball player. It's hard it's hard to think about, you know, if there's validity to this. And I don't know that the – it didn't sound like the Northwestern baseball thing was as much tied to hazing as just general sort of abusive behavior from the coach.
Any chance that AD is still around at the end of the year?
No. And the tough part about that is it's despite the fact that it's across the you know, now three programs, the interesting thing is, like, it's hard to imagine that there was ever any sort of group-wide, hey, you guys do what you got to do to build a team, you know what I mean? Like, but I would think that an athletic director at this point in time, seeing this thing at Northwestern, would probably have to be pretty intentional about going to head coaches and going, hey, by the way, if any of this kind of crap's going on, end it yesterday. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Whereas Phillips, the current ACC commissioner, who was there for a long time at Northwestern as the athletic director, I mean, he's going to get implicated in whatever way. However, if it's just people sniping at him or if he loses his job, I don't know. But you could see where an athletic director might not be aware of that kind of stuff unless there have been written complaints that never got dealt with, and then his tail's going to get in trouble, I'm sure, or get scolded, or however you want to do it, however you want to refer to that. But it just seems like if you're administrating this sort of thing at this point in time where it's like, I ain't even given that a thought. Would hope my head coaches would have not allowed this sort of thing to happen. And however any formal, fun way, you know, or nasty and abusive. Because the other thing that's happened in the last 3 months was a lot of the Harvard women's hockey team that had a pretty hefty thing, and I don't even know where that stands. If that's still, that investigation's still ongoing, coaches still, I don't know. But you know, those things, that kind of stuff was once permissive, and again, it's I don't say permissive like it was okay. Well, it was never regulated. And there are anti-hazing laws and things like that, and most people just associate that with the
players,
fraternity
players.
And sorority kids, yep, and right. Then player, sure. Yeah, and then to a lesser extent, senior or old player, young player, and all that, and you know, but golly, some of this stuff has crept into some nastiness in a way that you go, how could you ever think that was? How would that ever be defensible? You know, And I mean, that's a yeah. If,
I think
if you're aware of it, you better deal with it.
I stopped playing competitive sports in seventh grade, so I'm far from some kind of like expert here, but it sure seems like there can be kind of a fine line between team building and hazing,
right?
Because you know, you build a team in part, right? Or not always, but you can build a team in part by collective suffering.
Sure.
Right? Like it's
the military's done it forever.
Sure. Yeah. And we, you know, the Junction Boys, mm-hmm. Not that that's like the pinnacle of what you should do in 2023, but that you get my point.
Sure.
And so it's not I guess shocking or completely unbelievable that it could kind of go from that to what it ended up at Northwestern.
Yeah. And
over a period of years.
I agree. And you know, the when we talked about it the other day, the Athletic article on this, how Clint and I talked about the, you know, our emotion went from, I chuckled at that point. You know, I chuckled at some of the stuff that happened early on. Sure. And then it's like, whoa, that took a turn right there. Whether that's, it's probably a lot of things. The writer did a really good job of because I think if the writer just goes there and ignores sort of the fun, innocent, you know, because you and I joked and Clint joked about naked chin-ups, you know. And, you know, we all kind of chuckled about it, but nobody was forced to do naked chin-ups. And it was like, some of the fat guys would jump up there and do naked chin-ups after they got out of the shower. You go, okay. That to me, it makes me chuckle, like the Jennifer Lawrence scene, mm-hmm. made me chuckle. Like, that's – but then, Yeah, then it goes to there's some nastiness involved in the Northwestern thing after that. And, you know, that's probably a fine line and just that sort of creep. Like, what can we do to make this better? Better is in air quotes. And then the next year, like, okay, this isn't funny anymore. This is nasty.
And I think, too, the other thing that people need to realize, and this probably extends to everything, not just like a football roster, but like, even though, like, you know, I would not be, offended or whatever by Naked Chin Up, right? There probably somebody is out there, right?
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm saying? And so you've got to, like, you've got to mold your situation to take care of those people. Otherwise, you run into problems like this. More Tech Talk next.
The podcast that finishes your workday in a very Red Raider way. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Hi, how are you? Good afternoon. It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Gus and Brennan. I'm Aaron. We're joining you today until 6:30. We'd love to hear what you have to say in the Yates Flooring Center chat line. You can access that at Double T 97.3.com or through the Double T 97.3 mobile app presented by Happy State Bank. We get this on the chat line. I would ask for your man card, AD, but I'm not surprised that you would want to see Barbie. I don't quite understand. Yeah, it's a blockbuster summer comedy. Why would I not want to see it?
Well,
Duff in Houston asks, do we need to do a sweep of Clint's cell phone to make sure that he's not hiding contraband?
Contraband he's probably hiding is some like mac and cheese or something.
Ooh, beefaroni is what he's probably hiding. Yeah.
Beefaroni.
How about this? So the folks at Field of 68, they do college basketball 24/7, 365, right? Mm-hmm. It's a pretty interesting outfit. Podcast, videos, interviews, analysis, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing kind of off-season reviews for most Power 5 programs. And they released one.
Meaning a review of last year.
Reviewing this off-season.
Oh, reviewing the off-season.
Yeah, reviewing the off-season.
Okay.
This was posted today. And would you care to hazard a guess as to what letter grade they gave the old Red Raiders?
Yeah, I saw this. It's all right. Not good.
D+.
Yeah. And I didn't read it, and I wanted to read it.
It's a video.
And I assume what goes into that is recruiting what? Recruiting and portal for sure.
I would guess on the most kind of base level, it's kind of an in and out analysis.
Yeah.
All right. Who are you saying goodbye to? Who are you welcoming? How good were you last year? And how do things look for this coming season? And they gave Texas Tech D+. Which I think is a little bit low.
Yeah, I would think so. I would have hoped for an A, but I would have, if we had put a letter grade on it, I probably would have guessed C, guessed that an entity like this might say C, but because I would have thought that maybe Toussaint and, you know, but I'd have to look down that list again, but maybe some of those guys would nudge it up a little bit.
The most important in out for Tech basketball this offseason was Mark Adams and turning him in for Grant McCasland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an upgrade.
It's an upgrade. I agree.
And while the immediate reaction might be to, like, ding you for having a coaching transition, Grant McCasland is a bona fide college basketball head coach. Has been doing it for years and years. And even the two gentlemen on this podcast agreed that Tech desperately needed a culture change. And that's what you got. And you got someone that emphasizes culture with what he does. And so I have a hard time kind of reconciling you upgraded from Mark Adams to Grant McCasland.
But it's still a D.
And yet you get a D plus. Right? The only way that that makes sense to me is if you replace all of your portal departures with kindergartners. And not tall ones either. Not ones that are like,
not
you know,
the alpha kindergartners.
Early growth spurt. I'm talking about like the reject kindergartners. Right? The glue eaters.
Those kids are oh,
right? The nose pickers. The pants wetters.
All right.
I'm just saying, like, that's the only way that makes sense. If you bring on McCasland and he's unable to bring on anybody else than the, you know, kindergartner reject squad. And he didn't do that.
No.
Like, did you rattle off a whole ton of top 50 transfer additions? No.
No.
You didn't. You got a little bit of a late start with your coaching transition compared to others. And you did okay. We'll see. But D-plus seems... I don't know. Because I think actually the D-plus was a kind of a rounded effort because I believe that one of the guys said C-plus and then the other guy said F-plus.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know how you get to F. I guess, because to me I would want to weight that toward head coach and culture change, but I guess their point is, you know, it yes, culture change is badly needed and it appeared to have happened, but we need to see it first. Maybe that's F plus guys take.
Because like West Virginia has to be an F, right?
Yeah.
It has to be.
Because that went down in June.
And so you're telling me that
Texas
Tech's offseason is only marginally better than what West Virginia
right.
had, which to me is laughable.
I agree.
Again, I'm not saying that it should be an A or even a B, right? Give me a C minus a C, that's fine. C plus if you're feeling generous.
Sort of like your college career, right? Just give me a C.
I just
right?
want to pass.
Just to pass.
I just want to get out of here. but D plus seems like really, really weird.
Yeah, the F plus thing seems like a lot. And again, it felt like the longer they were at it, the better they got. I don't mean that. I don't mean like they improved, but like it felt like the portal additions later on were made at the expense of a better list of schools. You know, there were some good teams that wanted Toussaint. We got him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a couple others that were, you know, there were some power fives after these dudes, and we got them. And it made me feel really good. If nothing else, it made me feel like I was confirming what, you know, I believe to be true. And it could be a great big old dose of hopium. I don't know, but I don't think so. I was excited. I'm excited about all of it, and it felt like the later we got, the more quick action. Hey, this guy's in the portal. Somebody get out there and see him. And coach went out there and visited him. Got him here on a visit. We got him signed. And you're like, whoa, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the dude took three or four visits. And Toussaint was the same way. And like the longer it went, the better it got. It felt like.
And it's not like, I mean, if this was last year and you lose Terrence Shannon and Kevin McCullough in the same offseason, those are big, gigantic blows.
Sure.
Right? You're losing a lot of production. I mean, Jalen Tyson would have liked to have him back. Daniel Bacho, whether he was hurt or whatever, never, I mean, he was just...
Disappeared after Christmas. Yeah.
Like, it's not like, I mean... You didn't have the 98 Bulls going to the portal.
Yeah.
This in the chat line from PJ. Not surprising coming from Goodman. I don't think Goodman was on there. I think it was...
Banner would be the other one that I would say is pretty prominent.
Yeah.
Of the exits.
Does it have their names? No. Yeah, but Goodman's not on there. No, it's the one guy that I see a lot on their stuff, and then one guy that I don't, and I'm not smart enough to know their names. Let me scroll. Yep, sorry, I got nothing. This on the Yates Flooring Center chat line from LH. K-State basketball coach says they will win the big one eventually. Interview airs Tuesday. I mean, probably want every coach to say that in every sport.
Yeah, and I would assume they're going to trend upward. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if you and I carried that out this spring in a conversation, or certainly post-basketball season, about Kentucky. If Coach Kyle were to sort of underperform or whatever this year again, and he moved on, who would be the candidates? And if Tang has another year like he had last year with the tournament and all the good vibes and everything, it wouldn't be one bit surprised to see him on that list for Kentucky.
All right, we're going to settle an argument next on Double T
97.3. The podcast put together with Red Raider fans in mind. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Hi there, how you going? It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Dr. Mike Gustafson and Clint Scott suspended. We have Brendan Riker in. Would love to hear your thoughts and comments on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at Double T 97.3.com. I'm curious, Gus, what do you make of this? Uproar is probably too strong of a word, but the all the focus on the running back position in the NFL, right? It just seems like we've been talking about this for years, how you can get a decent one in the mid rounds. You don't need to just really invest in that position, and now I guess the players are kind of coming around on, oh wait, hold on, that's affecting my bottom line.
Yeah, the running backs.
Yeah,
specifically those players are. Yeah, I. This to me is a football version of Moneyball. Over time, the those within the game have seen, just a valuation, a shift in valuations, and just what you, just the way you described it, that, the shift within the game is to say, hey, you summed it up nicely, but you can get a really nice, more than adequate couple of running backs in the fourth and fifth round or of that sort of ilk, and be better off than having the one high-end feature back. And due to injury risk, and, there's probably some risk management and whatever, and just in terms of a bang for the buck, and the most valuable position has been quarterback, followed by receiver, and then it went down to tight end and running back, tight end just a tick above. And I've wondered about that position. How much of that has to do with just the scarcity of, or the lack of scarcity? In other words, there's a lot of good running backs, and there's only a couple of just great ones. And so,
and the difference between great and good is
right. I mean, there's no doubt.
Fairly small.
There's no doubt that you look at Saquon Barkley and go, man, that dude's special. He is, but there's an injury risk. And how much of this has to do with, first of all, the game is running through quarterbacks. There's a lot more throwing now than ever before, and the skill set of running backs, it's not Earl Campbell getting 25 toss sweeps a game and being the old school battering rams, which I loved when I was a kid. I mean, that stuff was awesome, but the longevity of those dudes that were rode hard, in other words, a lot of touches. And now it's, it feels like the backs with the most value are the dudes that have the ability to run the ball, certainly, to catch the ball, and to be involved in pass protection. And so the diversity of the diversity of the skill set, because so many defenses work around the idea of, hey, every time, you know, Aaron Dickens is on the field, they're not
you
throwing
take
it.
The play off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you just guard 10 guys now because let him run around. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain backs. Yeah, that guy gets exhausted just running on the field. But there are certain backs who can't be involved in one of the other aspects of it because they can't pass block or they can't catch or whatever. Whereas, you know, some of these dudes that can split out and take a linebacker out there and change the way the play is defended, that's a huge skill set. But I don't know that the pass catching running back is you know, the $40 million a year guy or the $30 million a year guy. I mean, it doesn't appear to be that way. It feels like these teams are more interested in a good running back's room that has a lot of balance and the ability to spread carries around. It could be a function of 17 regular season games and just how beat up those dudes get. I don't know, but it really is an interesting conversation, and I think it is very much tied to analytics, good or bad.
This on the Yates Flooring Center chat line, someone says, Saquon Barkley was offered $22 million a year and declined. I don't feel bad for him. Yeah, neither do we. Like, we're not playing some sad violin for running backs. It's just interesting that an entire position group in any kind of professional major sport in America is devalued at this level.
At that level, yeah. If you just said it was a guard or a you know, I mean, interior line versus tackle or something, I might have gone, okay, or tight ends. But this one that touches the ball, handles the ball.
Yeah, because, like, I would guess that if you are an NFL fan, right, to where you watch your favorite team's games more often than not on the weekends, you probably know who your team's starting running back is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Probably not the same percentage of folks know all five starting linemen, right? Or your starting offensive guards. It's a high-profile position, like you said. Touches the ball a lot. And then to just not be, you know, compensated in a way that is somewhat equal, it seems like, to, you know, your backup receiver even. It's a little bit it's interesting. I'm not crying for anybody. They're getting paid to play a game. It's just, again, it is an interesting story.
Highest paid NFL player, 1980. And it was me just picking a year. Walter Payton, running back.
How much was he paid?
Like about $500,000.
A little bit of a bargain there.
Here's 1989. Hurry up. Quarterback. Running back. Herschel Walker. Cowboys, 1989, quarterback, wide receiver, running back, quarterback, defensive end. So I don't know how much of the 1980, I'm not seeing a list here just on my quick search in the way that I just saw. Like, I'd be more interested, I think less about Walter Payton as the top player and more about the top 10 would probably be more telling. But I would guess that in 1980, that the feature back, the impact guy, Earl Campbell for the Houston Oilers, Tony Dorsett, those dudes that were game changer good, that were touching it 25 times a game, probably on like 24 carries and one little flare pass screen thing. You know, I would see that more of them would be likely to be at the top of the pay scale relative to today. Like today, we don't hardly, probably wouldn't see any of them in the top 10.
How much of it do you think is the fact that in order for a running back to be successful, you're really depending on five guys, maybe fewer than that, depending on the play, to win their one-on-one battles, right? Like, you could be, again, Walter Payton or, you know, O.J. Simpson or, you know, whoever, Reggie Bush, our man at with the Lions that retired early, that for some reason I'm blanking.
Barry
Sanders, thank you. And if your line is just crap, right, then you're not going to reach your full potential. I wonder how much of that is a factor. Whereas if you're a receiver, you just got to beat one guy. right? That's on you. Like, if you can beat one guy, or on the other side, if you're a cornerback and you can lock down one guy, then you're immensely valuable. Whereas with a running back, you could pay him all kinds of money. But if your line sucks, it doesn't matter.
That's a good point.
More Tech Talk next.
The podcast put together with Red Raider fans in mind. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Hi there, how you going? It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Gus and Brennan. I'm Aaron. We're joining you today until 6:30. Would love to hear your thoughts and comments on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at Double T 97.3.com. Someone says this: they got up to 140 miles an hour on a country road in North Dakota, blew through a T in the road into a wheat field. The Hemi was cooking, fired up a fatty, and continued on. This on the chat line. Someone says, in 1976, on New Year's Eve, a friend roped me into taking him home in Lubbock from Leveland. I got my improved Formula Firebird up to 135 miles an hour. The friend never again asked me for another ride, LOL. Somebody says, 178 miles an hour going to Yoakum County to play golf on the back road. That, you might have won that one. Holy smokes.
Goodness.
Somebody says this, my new Dodge will run up to 105. I tested it out on the way from Weatherford on I-20 this weekend. This on the chat line from Eric, who said that he was going pretty fast due to a dog emergency, kind of like Jordan Addison. Says that he had to get his dog sedated to test whether she had a torn ACL. Got her out of sedation long enough to get her home. And when I put her on her bed, she stopped breathing. But he says that they stopped breathing because of the position that she was in. Once she was on her stomach in the car, she was fine. This in the chat line.
Wow. Interesting.
Dr. Gus.
Yes, sir.
As you gaze into your crystal ball, do you see Shohei Ohtani being traded before the deadline?
Oof.
Yeah, future fairy.
You know, that is... that is a fascinating topic because it would be pricey, certainly. And it would be pricey, you know, like, because one of the little rumors that was floating, I don't know if it was a, if there's teeth to it, or if they just made an inquiry, or if it was just a columnist that wrote about it to get everybody chattering. But what about Ohtani to the Baltimore Orioles? Because the Orioles are for real. Just took three or four from the Rays, two games in front of the, you know, they're in front of the Yankees, right. Red Sox.
And they're young.
Yes. And the number one prospect in all of baseball is Jackson Holliday, who's been out of high school baseball for 13 months now, 14. You know, like, that's what's coming. And so they've got some beef to trade. But the key thing there is, if you're the Baltimore Orioles, there's no disrespect to Baltimore, but you think you're getting in on the half a billion, you know, the 10 years, 50 million a year for, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I would think now more than ever with these six teams on both sides of the playoffs, like, it's costly to go all in the playoffs where there's some randomness involved. You know, I mean, I won't say some randomness, but you can have a really good team and something doesn't go your way, or a couple hitters cool off or something. You go, oh, he just gave away the future for that. You know, and Ohtani did good, but he didn't care. And, you know, and I'm as intrigued by him as anybody, but I just, it feels like to me now, the thing that's easier to predict is the value of his contract in free agency.
I mean, monies.
Yeah, versus
all the monies.
Versus who's willing to dump a bunch of prospects in what could be a very short grab. You know, how I mean, but he's so interesting. We talked earlier about the running back position and risk. I mean, if something happens and he gets over there and pulls a hamstring and he can't hit or pitch, and you go, oh, this was costly. You know, the level of prospects you give up. I don't know. I truly don't know. And I think, you know, my sense is Moreno, the Angels owner, is not going to part with him at the trade deadline. You know, just because I think he's got a history of getting starry-eyed, you know, Pujols, Hamilton, and some of those guys, and just not do it. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't be putting money on my prediction there.
I saw an interesting article, and I think it was in The Athletic, and it was purely just kind of like a thought exercise,
mm-hmm.
because it would never happen. In part because at least one of these players has a no-trade clause, but there you might have seen this too. They suggested, hey, instead of like trying to get some kind of king's ransom in terms of prospects, why don't you clear your slate here and trade and package Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon all together, and that way you just like nuke your payroll. It's like it goes from a high one to like minimal.
And reset all your free agency. Yeah. You probably get some prospects out of that.
But it would be kind of an NBA salary dump.
Sure. Kind of deal. And that's one thing about some of these trade deadline decisions is if I've got a player that's probably overpaid at this point in this contract, you know, 4 years, 85 million, or 5 years, 85 million to somebody that's just, he's okay. But, you know, he reflects somebody you might want. The value in it is if you're willing to go, hey, I'll take the player and his contract, but you're not getting much else. I'm just getting him off your hands, you know, and you send me a, you know, an A-ball backup catcher for it. And what you were really doing was just taking the contract, mm-hmm. versus me going, nah, I really need prospects for this guy. And then you go, okay, we'll give you a couple of prospects, but I'm taking $5 million of that $17 million a year. You're paying the other 12. And that's the math that happens. But I'm looking forward to this trade deadline. And I say this, you know, unabashed fourth generation St. Louis Cardinals fan who for the first time in, you know, it's been a great run, but for the first time in 20 plus years, clarity on them as a seller, which it just hadn't happened in a long time because they've always sort of been in that division thing and all that. And, you know, and so they're, and they've got free agents to move. They've got a closer. They've got starting pitching. They've got two or three versatile players that fit in this market. And so I'm as interested as ever because they have the potential to reshape, not reshape from 2027 on. They could if they want to, but they got the opportunity to reshape next year's roster. And, you know, but Ohtani drives this conversation, period. I mean, from a national perspective, just such a unique talent. My goodness.
What should the Rangers do?
I still think it's some bullpen help. There could be a starting pitcher in there. But I think the most impactful thing they can do is bullpen help. And just, you know, they helped themselves with Aroldis Chapman for sure. You know, like he's come in and done good things. That dude peeled off that 102, 103 mile an hour fastball. It kind of went viral.
Was there a pet emergency attached to it?
God almighty. Yeah, there should have been the way that thing ran like crazy. But just, yeah. I mean, and I don't know that they're getting another closer level guy, but just an incremental improvement in a role or something in that pen. I would be surprised if the Rangers are involved in a blockbuster, you know, big headline type move, but, you know, bullpen guy for a triple A guy or something, or a veteran pen guy or a left hander or whatever it is that they see they need. You know, there could be a mid rotation starting pitcher, maybe, because everybody's going to take that. Everybody needs that. You also don't want to get caught up in just prisoner of the moment. Well, the Dodgers kicked their butt on Saturday. You can't trust Dunning. Like, man, Dunning's been really good. So now's, you know, but, you know, is there room for a slight improvement in a rotation spot for, you know, a decent AAA prospect or AA prospect? Sure.
It's funny. The I guess it was yesterday. The Japanese media that follow Ohtani, they posed with their LA English speaking media counterparts for a picture yesterday, because I guess that was the last home game before the deadline. Oh. Just in case.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Just in case Ohtani gets traded. More Tech Talk next.
It's every Red Raider's favorite podcast. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Hi, how are you? Good afternoon. It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com with Gus and Brennan. I'm Aaron. We're joining you today until 6:30. Would love to hear your thoughts and your comments on the Yates Flooring Center chat line at Double T 97.3.com. Today is the 40th anniversary of something, Gus.
Yes. How about this?
1983.
We would have been really best prepared to play the clip from that. But yeah, go ahead.
We're not that professional. 1983 at Yankee Stadium. George Howard Brett hit a two-run home run off of Goose Gossage.
Yeah, that was hard to do back then.
In the top of the ninth inning to put the Royals up 5-4. After the home run, the skipper of the Yankees, one Billy Martin, cited to the umpires a rule stating that any foreign substance on a bat could extend no further than 18 inches from the knob. If you had knob on today's Tech Talk Bingo card, you can mark that square off. The umpires measured the amount of pine tar on the bat. It extended about 24 inches, leading the home plate umpire to signal Brett out and end the game as a Yankees win. And we've all seen, I'm sure, the video of George Brett rocketing out of the dugout.
I do have the clip prepared if you need it.
Oh, atta boy.
There you go. See, that's 40-year-old Brennan Riker right there.
It's also nice to not have Clint over there around eating beefaroni.
I'm going to measure it across home plate.
I've never seen this.
I never have either.
I don't know what they're measuring. They might be going to call George Brett out.
Well, he's out.
Yes, sir.
Brett is out. Look at this. Brett is out. And
he's steaming mad.
He is out and having to be forcibly restrained from hitting plate umpire Tim McClellan. And the Yankees have won the ball game 4-3. Brett is called out for using an illegal bat or with the illegal substance on the bat.
Like I said, I have seen this before, Frank, and Gaylord Perry just took the bat away from home plate umpire Jim McClellan. He's going to take the bat. They're going to take it, so they cannot take it into the American League office or wherever they take it to be examined.
Boy, that...
Does that not scream 1983 to you? Yeah, I mean, the organ in the background.
Yes, that's the thing. I was thinking the same thing. It's beautiful. Yeah, and that, of course, there was a protest. It came back.
They replayed it.
Replayed the last. They count home run. The Yankees got an at bat. The interesting thing, probably a lot of interesting stuff about that, is it was, I don't know, a month later, 6 weeks later or whatever, when they resumed that game after the protest, Billy Martin wasn't happy, as you can imagine. But he was thoughtful enough to go out and appeal, and the umpires were thoughtful enough to go, you know what that little bleep is going to do? And he went out and appealed, hey, George Brett didn't touch first base, because it was a different umpire crew, because it was 6 weeks later. It wasn't like the next day. And the umpires, probably thinking, hey, this is Billy Martin, get ready for whatever level of paranoia you come up with, had gotten, I don't know what you call it, sworn, like, not deposition,
affidavit.
But affidavit, there you go. pull it out. Here you go, first base umpire. I, you know, Mike Gustafson do solemnly swear that he touched first base. And he went around all three bases, and they went, all right. He went back in the dugout, and it was like three, you know, whatever, three ground outs, and that was it. And I think it was on the front end of a doubleheader. I can't remember if that's exactly right. But, yeah, that right there, that George Brett was as mad as, you know what I mean? Like, that was volatile. And the third base coach was Dick Houser, I think, and he was, you know, they're trying to, like, keep him from killing somebody. And he, like, doing something that would have jeopardized his career, but he was fuming. And interestingly, I saw a little bit of Cooperstown yesterday, the induction, and Brett was there, and I thought it was a really good crowd of past inductees there, but it was good to see Brett with a big smile on his face, and I didn't even think, hey, 40 years ago tomorrow, but it was 1983, and it was such a big deal at the time. My goodness.
The umpire who called him out, Tim McClelland, that was his first year.
Oh.
How about that? He just retired like 8 years ago. I mean, he was working until like through 2015. He also was the umpire when where's 03 when Sammy Sosa was caught with a corked bat.
Oh wow!
How about that?
Yeah, that was a little yeah, a little more clarity there.
A little bit.
It was a busted bat. Yeah. And he was like, oh, that's got cork in it. That is interesting.
This on the chat line from Sooner in Lubbock. Does anyone know if Marcos Santos Silva is still trying to play football?
I don't. I know he got cut last year in camp. He was with the Browns, I believe. But I don't know. I would think that would be a distant long shot for him to get a second year as such a long shot. Like what would he have been able to do in the last year that would go, oh,
right.
He's you know, because – That's
he didn't catch on with like XFL or anything like that.
There you go. That's exactly where I was going. Like if there wasn't going to be an opportunity there, then you know, it'd be a really cool story. That's a hard thing to imagine.
We'll have coverage of the Texas Rangers baseball team coming up at 6:30 here on Double T 97.3.
And cover of the coverage of the Houston Astros.
That's right.
If you want to hear the same game but with your announcers, Aaron Dickens, you just flip it down the dial to 100.7 or AM 950.
Yeah, big series.
Yeah, it really is.
Because they'll only play one more time, right?
Right.
It's I don't like that.
And I know. It is where the more balanced schedule hurts. I mean, one of the drawbacks of it was 19 games against the same teams and all that, but the would prefer that the division opponents be able to play a little bit more and be able to play later in the season when, you know, when the race is unfolding.
Right when this rivalry seems to be kind of getting off in terms of both teams being decent to good, they change the schedule and you just see it like four times.
And the and Astros three games back, they would love a sweep.
Sure.
Tie this thing up. And what a frenzy that would create. More than likely, it's probably not going to be a sweep, but one team's going to win two of three, and just in terms of a likelihood, and which would involve a one-game shift. So the Astros probably don't need to lose the series, and they dang sure don't need to get swept because they don't want to. Because as you said, these head-to-head games move the needle on both sides. It helps the other team and hurts you, and so with these opportunities dwindling, there's still plenty more games left, but when your opportunity to butt heads and, you know, the Astros need to win a series right here.
Yeah, the Astros have won four of the seven games that they've played so far this year. If the Rangers win two of the next three here in Houston, that would mean that would be tied going into the final series in Arlington in September. So you would have, you'd be playing for the silver boot there.
And your boy, Yordan Alvarez, there's finally at least conversation about him getting into rehab and some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But those bad oblique deals, man, those things are, it's pretty rare that you go, oh, no problem, he'll be back in a week. You know, because those guys are so rotational and big and explosive and all, the big power guys like him. And sure enough, this is what? Been a 6-week injury, AD? I mean, and long costly. Time. Yeah. Costly.
We'll have coverage of this entire series, of course, for you here on Double T 97.3 and 100.7 The Score. Times the same, all three games. So 6:30 across the board, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on Double T 97.3 for Rangers coverage, and then 6:40 across the board Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for Astros coverage on 100.7 The Score. And then both teams will be out or off on Thursday before resuming play on Friday. Astros will be hosting the Rays, and the Rangers will be on the West Coast taking on the San Diego.
This has been the Tech Talk Podcast, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Check out our library of Double T 97.3 podcasts at Double T 97.3.com.